Hello and welcome to another episode of Academy of Blues, a Chelsea FC podcast. Academy of Blues is a Chelsea FC podcast brought to you from Los Angeles, California, and now, for the first time ever, being recorded at a time when Chelsea FC is actually playing football matches. In this episode, we examine the Blues' first game in 105 days. The days of self-quarantine are over, and that which we called a festival of football has begun. I'm your host, Matty Gebrechristos, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Daniel Gonzalez, who is 100% not rusty, even after 3 months of quarantine. Daniel, how are you?
It's true. I mean, my hamstring is feeling a little bit off. I might have to, you know, pull up and get subbed out.
Yeah.
We have Mourinho on the bench here waiting to jump into the...
We have 10 players on the bench now, so you are easily replaced.
Thanks.
I'm kidding. You are absolutely not. Hey, man, this is really exciting. This is our first episode that we're getting to record right after watching a Chelsea game live or in the same weekend as they actually played it. So I am super duper excited for this journey that we're going to get to go on. And today we get to look at Chelsea against Aston Villa. We get to review that game. And in the second part of the show, we get to preview the Manchester City game that's coming up on Thursday. Before we get into that, I would like to invite all of our listeners who are not subscribed yet to subscribe to our podcast wherever you may be listening. This podcast is just getting started. We are only on episode 13 out of however many we'll get to. So that means we do not have a whole lot of subscribers, but we do want a whole lot of subscribers. And we don't want you to miss any episodes when they come out. And with all the football that's going to be happening, they're going to come at you thick and fast. So make sure you're subscribed. We're going to have an episode every week, or at least we're going to try and have one
our hardest. Every week. We're going to try as much as we can. Maybe two a week. Who knows?
Maybe two a week. Who knows? But with that said, go ahead and subscribe. And you can also reach us by emailing us
at Academy of Blues.
Right. academyofblues@gmail.com.
Correct.
And we're also on the socials at Academy of Blues on Instagram and on Twitter. So, Daniel, Aston Villa against Chelsea. The villains against the Blues. This game was played on Sunday, I think at 4:15 their time for us. It happened at 8:15 in the morning. To us, really, that's all that matters, because that's when we get to watch it.
It's always the best when it's a late game.
Yeah.
I love not waking up at 4 in the morning to watch a game.
Right.
I'll do it anyway.
Yeah. And you'll do it, especially after having to wait for Chelsea for over 3 months.
Absolutely. I would have woken up. I would have stayed up till 3 a.m. I would have watched any time.
Yeah.
I would have watched this game.
How has the restart or project restart of the Premier League been for you so far?
It's super weird. There's like all sorts of stuff that I never even thought about. Like, obviously, trying to cram all the games into a certain like time period was something that was like big on everyone's mind. But something that there's no time to think about it was like contracts for me, especially because there's like players like Pedro and Willian whose contracts are up before the season actually ends.
Right.
And we're still not sure how that's going to work out for a lot of these players. I think Pedro's already like signed, or he's made an agreement with Roma. So he's probably not going to be here after his contract is up. But Willian, it's still kind of up in the air. What's going to be happening with him? Obviously, Lampard trusts him because, as we're going to get to, he did start this Villa game. But with other players' contracts up, with Timo Werner coming in, not being able to play for Leipzig in the Champions League because he wants to get a good preseason with Chelsea, there's just all sorts of shuffling around of dates that is just weird. It's just bizarre. And I don't think we've ever had, or ever will have again, another time where this sort of weirdness is going on throughout the sport across the world. Like, it's not even just in England. It's everywhere. Every single country is dealing with this.
Totally. It's also been kind of weird for me, but I have been absolutely enjoying it. It started last Thursday, and I've basically had every single game that's played. I've at least had it on in the background, even if I haven't sat down and watched it. But I think over the past 7 days, I think I've watched somewhere between 7 to 9 games.
My goodness.
And that's been fantastic
for
me. Yeah, I you know, I'm all about it. So
you consume football.
Yeah, and now you know what? Right now it's called research. It's not even it's not even anything.
It's not entertainment.
It's research.
Yeah, this is work.
Indeed.
Work expenses.
Exactly. It's going to go into my tax breaks thing, however that works. So with that, let's get into our game against Aston Villa. The first thing that I want to talk about is the lineup. I think leading up to this game and to the release of the lineup, I think every Chelsea fan was wondering, what is Lampard going to do? Because for the first time as Chelsea manager, he had a pretty much fully fit squad. Now, there were a couple of exceptions. Hudson-Odoi was out with, I think, an injury that's going to keep him out for about 10 days or so, and so was Fikayo Tomori. But other than that, he had everybody back, and so it was the talk of the town, the talk of London town, what lineup he was going to go for. How did you react, or what did you think about the lineup that Lampard went with?
I think we definitely, for City, we should definitely do this, but we should have made our predictions for the lineup, I would have been so off. If you want me to read it real quick.
Yeah, please do.
We had Kepa in goal, a back four of Azpilicueta, Rudiger, Christensen, Marcus Alonso, three in the middle of sorts, say it's a 4-3-3, of Mateo Kovacic, N'Golo Kante, and Mason Mount, and then a front three of Willian, Giroud, and Loftus-Cheek, which was, out of all of those players, Loftus-Cheek was the one that threw me off that he was starting. I mean, he hasn't played in what, over a year?
Yeah, he has a year and I think 13 months or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, this is a player that I don't think he's even played under Lampard besides like preseason stuff. And wait, even preseason?
No, he didn't even play. He hadn't kicked the ball under Lampard at all.
Ever. And first time he's back and fit and ready to go, he starts this game.
Yeah.
In I don't think it's even his preferred position, a left winger. He's very
agile, and he can play in one of like many different positions. That was one of the positions that Maurizio Sarri used him in for a few of the Europa League games, and it was a position that he played in when he was at Crystal Palace as well. But I think that his preferred position is actually to be one of the three in midfield.
Right. So that was the craziest one for me. I mean, what did you think when you saw this lineup?
Yeah, I was super excited that he was starting. I think you texted me. Very early on for us.
I was refreshing that Twitter. I was waiting for them to put out the lineup. And as soon as they did, I sent you a picture of it.
And when I saw that, I was just like, he stars. and so that was awesome. I don't know. I think for a lot of Chelsea fans, it was one of those cases where he was doing great right before he got injured. And so in our heads, in our minds, the longer he went without playing, the better he got and the bigger impact he was going to have in the team. And so to see him come back, that was awesome. And to actually officially see him in the starting lineup, that was great. I was maybe a little bit disappointed that Billy Gilmore didn't start because he had had such a strong two games right before the lockdown took place. And Jorginho was going to be suspended for this game. So I was hoping that he would actually start this game and get to play a little bit, but we didn't see him. But that's totally fine. My guess is he's going to start at the weekend against Leicester City in the FA Cup. And that kid's got so much game time ahead of him. And he's already contending for a starting spot at 18 or maybe 19. I think he might have just turned 19. But the future is bright for him. So I was a little bit disappointed not to see him in the starting lineup. But I felt like we had a solid lineup. The other two surprises that I had besides Ruben Loftus-Cheek was, one was Andreas Christensen. I thought that he would go for a Zuma and Rudiger pairing, considering that Aston Villa, they play a very physical game. And the other surprise that I had was Giroud over Abraham. Abraham scored in the return fixture against Villa back in December when we won 2-1. And so I thought that he would start him. And also Abraham has had a very, very, very good record in against teams that have just been promoted from the championship. So this would have been a great game for him to start. So I was expecting him to start. Didn't start. Totally fine because Lampard was vindicated in his selections.
I do think a part of this comes into play is that we do have City in just a few days. Actually, by the time this podcast comes out, it will be the next day. It'll be...
Yep. It's going to be City tomorrow.
Yeah, yep. Tomorrow. We're recording this at 4 a.m. on Wednesday.
Yes.
But a lot of that is going to have to come. I don't think we're going to see at all the same starting lineup. I think it's going to be a complete mixture. I could be completely wrong. I have no idea what's going on in Lampard's head. But, I mean, looking at our bench in this match, Pulisic could start, Zuma could start, as you were talking about. I think Reece James could have made an argument, but his little cameo in this game wasn't the best.
Right.
Looks like I think we're still going to be going with Aspi at the right back. Tammy Abraham could definitely start in that match as well.
Yep.
But yeah, so that's the starting lineup.
So with that, the game starts, and I was actually very pleased with how the game started, because after the first 3 or 4 minutes where it was consistently just long balls from back to front and back to front, Chelsea really brought the ball down and they kept it on the ground and they kept passing it with kind of the same flow that they had in the Everton game right before the quarantine started. So one of the thoughts that I had watching the first half, or for the majority of the first half, was, wow, we really don't look like we're rusty at all. And mind you, Aston Villa did have one game ahead of us since the restart. They got to play the very first game against Sheffield United. So they had already put in 90 minutes, which means they got to kind of get the feel of competitive Premier League soccer again. And in watching, I got to watch Man City against Arsenal. I got to watch Tottenham against Man United, Leicester against Norwich, Wolves against West Ham. In all of those games, it was so evident, the fact that players were rusty was so evident. You could tell in their passing and their running even, and in their dribbling and shooting. With Chelsea, I really didn't see that in the opening 30 minutes or so of the game, because the passing was very, very crisp. Perhaps the only thing that was lacking was the crossing. We had 3 or 4 crosses that went either too wide or over everybody, or just went out for goal kicks.
I feel like the story of this game was a lot of, because we're missing Jorginho in that middle three, and because that middle three was Kante, Mason Mount, and Kovacic, Mason Mount is great, and he was great this game, but he doesn't provide that same sort of link between the defense and the attacking trio that Jorginho does. So I feel like what we saw a lot of was kind of like shuffling between the middle, but then eventually getting out to the sides for Alonso and Aspi to cross in. And they generally had a good amount of space to do it, but not a lot of good crosses. I think that was where we were the sloppiest. And despite all that, Aspi did get a few good crosses in, but he had a lot of chances. When you have that many chances, a few of them are going to come off eventually.
Yeah. I think Aston Villa didn't do anything to flatter themselves in this game. We can say, we talk about how great we were, and I don't think we were particularly great, but we can be happy in the fact that we got the 3 points. But Aston Villa, you can tell, is a team that is really, really, really struggling. And that was one of the things that came to our advantage in seeing that Aspi just got endless chances to be able to get a cross in. So the game goes pretty much one way for the first half an hour or so. The only real chances were, I think Ruben had a half chance with a header that went really wide. Yeah. And then Mason Mount had a shot, which completely shocked me, because it was such a powerful shot with his left foot. And
I
don't know if it's the fact that there are no fans in there, so you can really hear every kick of the ball now. I don't know if that like mentally messes with me and makes me think the shot is stronger than it actually is. But I was like, well, this kid's got a real shot on him. And if that was just slightly, a little bit more to the side or a little bit even higher, that would have been almost impossible for the keeper to save. Kovacic also had a shot which was deflected, which almost snuck in, but the keeper was able to save it. And then something happened that made me go, well, Daniel, we're back. Because for all the possession and the chances, and for all the lack of possession and chances that Aston Villa had, it was actually Aston Villa who took the lead.
Oh, now that... I mean, you could see... one of the highlights of this match, for a small tangent for me, was seeing John Terry during it as a assistant manager.
Yeah. Assistant agent.
Assistant agent.
He's an agent.
To Aston Villa.
Yeah, still a Chelsea employee.
But just working in Aston Villa.
We have
undercover
agents everywhere. We have
David Luiz.
We have two at Man United. We have one at Arsenal. Do we have any at Spurs? Not yet. William might be our agent at Spurs.
Eventually, yeah.
But agents everywhere.
Yeah. So, but one of the highlights for me was seeing John Terry during this match, because he barely celebrates this this moment that happens at the 43rd minute.
Yep.
It starts with Jack Grealish kind of like doing the Willian thing of dribbling at the edge of the box and not really going anywhere before putting out this cross to Aston Villa number 6, Douglas Luiz, who is in miles of space, puts in a cross that goes pretty much over a lot of players' heads, but an Aston Villa player does get to it, and Kepa actually makes a pretty good save, a really good reflex save. The shot is only from like a couple meters away, and it's not that strong, but he gets down, and he gets to it pretty fast. The problem is that after this cross goes in, and it kind of goes over a lot of Chelsea players' head, a lot of the defenders stop.
Yeah.
They just stop, and they watch. And after the shot gets saved by Kepa, when the ball rebounds out, there is 4 Aston Villa players who are all closer to the ball than any other Chelsea player. Hauser gets a second shot in, and this one is right up close. Kepa's already on the ground, so he can't get to it just in time. Rudiger is kind of sprinting in from the back and tries to get a header to it on the line, but doesn't time it right, and it's 1-0 to Aston Villa. Despite all the possession, despite all the shots, despite everything, 1-0 to Aston Villa. What did you think?
It reminded me of a lot of those home games that we've had earlier in the season where we were just peppering teams, or we were on top of it, or we were just like passing it from side to side and unable to just penetrate the defense. And then with one either set piece or whatever it might be, the smaller team scores on us and then we're just stuck for the rest of the game. I was so nervous that this would be another one of those cases. Unfortunately, the game goes in a different direction than that. But that goal was classic Chelsea this season. It is a cross that we don't deal with that ends up in the back of the net. I don't know if you can really fault Kepa because it was such a close shot. The thing that did get me was the fact that Hauser was the one who gets his foot to the ball to take the shot initially. But as he's doing that, he's like sliding slash falling. And then he's the one who gets up and kicks it again, which really means the Chelsea players were just standing still and watching. So that was disappointing.
Not to name any names, but Christensen, Mason Mount, Aspie.
Yeah.
And these are like experienced guys.
Exactly.
Except for maybe Mason Mount.
Right. But, and also, you don't really expect him to do defensive work. You don't expect him to be the last man defending, even when it's a free kick, because he's not physically the most imposing player on there. Another thing that was really disappointing about the goal was when it was scored. It was just before halftime. So I wonder how much it changed Lampard's halftime team talk. But that is one of the worst times to concede a goal, because it really does deflate your confidence and your just how you feel the game is going as you go into halftime.
What I will say about this Chelsea team is that I think, unlike when we were playing under Sadi, and I don't have like the animosity towards Sadi that a lot of people do have that are Chelsea fans, but even under, like, when we were playing under Sadi, going down, it kind of felt like the entire team just kind of fell apart at that moment. And I think what Lampard has done a really great job of doing, along with a lot of the youth players that have come in, is that there's still this sense of belief. Like, even if we go down a goal, you can see that the players don't stop as much. And they're still trying things. They're still trying to get shots off, trying to get passes off, and they don't, like, completely deflate. And I think that speaks a lot to the effect that Lampard has had on the mentality of these players. Because I think, personally, if this game happened last season, at this time in the season, with Sadi as a coach, we would have probably lost this game 1-0, 2-0, something like that.
Totally.
Or drawn it.
Yeah.
But I can't see us coming back to a win.
Right. And I think, I mean, the second half is a clear testament to this. Last season, one of the problems we had with Sarri was it was the exact same game plan for every game. And if the game isn't going according to plan, plan B was just more of the same plan with the exact same players coming in to replace the exact same players who kept going out. So in this game, if this was a Sarri season, we would have seen Barkley in for Kovacic, and then maybe Pedro in for Willian, and that would have been it.
Which, we have to be kind of thankful that Lampard is here. Amongst a million other things that happened because of the transfer ban, the fact that Lampard is here, and that he has such a good sense of timing with his subs, makes a huge difference in this game, and that is something that would have never... I mean, I don't know how things are going at Juventus right now, but I can imagine that Sadi's not making good use of a extended sub list or anything like that.
Right, because he loves to play one way, and it's his way or the highway. So, second half starts, and it starts pretty much the same way that the first half started, with Chelsea dominating a lot of possession. I think I saw the possession stats say 80-20 at one point in favor of Chelsea. But still, there was not that killer instinct in the box. We had a few moments with like Mason Mount dribbling through one or two players and putting them across. By the way, up until, you know, about the 60th minute, Mason Mount was the only Chelsea player who actually looked bright and who looked like he was going to make a difference for us in the final third. He was moving around a lot, and he was just not afraid to take people on or cross or something.
If I could give like twin man of the matches in this game, I surprisingly wouldn't give them to anybody with a goal and assist to their name. I'd give them to N'Golo Kanté and I'd give them to Mason Mount. Those two were running that midfield this entire game. It was Mason Mount pulling off all the passes, pulling off shots, if you wanted to, pulling off a lot of pressing, and it was N'Golo Kanté continually fouling Jack Grealish without getting a card until the very end.
The highlights of this game could just be that. So as the game was moving slowly in the same vein in favor of Aston Villa, Lampard decides to make a change. And you and I saw that change coming. The first one was RLC off. And we saw that coming because though it is his awesome and big return and everything, he did look a little bit rusty. And he didn't look like the version of RLC that we saw before the injury. And that's going to take time. So no dig on him. Totally fine. I thought that he would have taken out Giroud at this point and brought in Abraham because Giroud really hadn't been involved up until this point. But he decides to take off Kovacic and RLC, and he brings in Pulisic and Ross Barkley. When we saw Ross Barkley, I think we both went, oh, Lord, why is he coming on?
And with Barkley, it's either one or the other.
Yeah.
It's terrible, worst game ever, or he's going to have the game of his life.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There's no in between.
He's either horrible or he's going to go and sink Liverpool out of the FA Cup. So Lampard makes a change in the 55th minute, which is about 5 minutes earlier than I thought he was going to make it. And instantly, those subs have a huge impact on the game.
So Chelsea are attacking. They're doing their thing. The problem with Chelsea up until this point, up until these subs, is that they have a lot of movement getting towards that final third, and they're generally keeping the ball well in those areas. But once it gets there, it kind of fizzles out. There's no one to make that attack. Giroud has hardly touched the ball at all at this point. And Loftus-Cheek is kind of losing a lot of passes. So once this change happens, Aspi kind of receives the ball on that right side, like we've seen a dozen or so times in this game so far. Puts in another cross, like we've seen a dozen or so times in this game so far. But this time, as he crossed it, it's a picture-perfect cross. I guess if you have, you know, a million chances, you're going to hit one off. Yeah. And who comes with a late run in except for the American, Christian Pulisic.
Christian Pulisic.
Who pulls off a nice little touch that kind of takes it over the keeper, hits the top of the bar, and kind of like comes down. It's 1-1 to Chelsea.
It is. And that felt so good to see. Now, keep in mind that Pulisic hadn't played a game since the opening game of the year, as in January 1st, 2020. So he's been out for a little over 6 months. From everything that we have heard, apparently he is ready to go. He's fully fit. He is hungry and everything. And Lampard did debate starting him, but opted not to in the end. And it would, to me, it was actually a smart decision because Pulisic loves running at defenders. He loves running behind defenders. And he's not afraid to take on anybody on. When you bring in a player like that, once a very, very, very thin Aston Villa squad has already played 60 or 70 minutes, then you have a huge advantage as opposed to starting him from the get-go. So even though it wasn't him running past anybody that really created the goal for him, it was just him running in, arriving at the box at the right time, and applying the right finish. So you can see how much it meant to him just with the way that he celebrated. And it was back to kickoff, and just a few minutes later...
Before we get to that, I do want to give a little bit of credit to Ross Barkley for this goal. And you pointed this out earlier.
That's right. I pointed it out when we were just talking as friends, not as show hosts.
But if you're watching this goal, you kind of wonder, it's a great cross, and Christian Pulisic is in the right place to put it in, but there's no Burnley player covering his run. That entire back four is occupied. And it's because Ross Barkley is making a... As a midfielder playing in that position, he's still making a run to the box that draws away the right back for Aston Villa, which leaves that open space at the very end that no Aston Villa player notices in time to kind of run in and cover him. So the reason that space is there is because of Ross Barkley. So, sorry, Ross Barkley. We talk a lot of smack. You do pull something off.
Yes, you did. You were at the right place in order to just free up Pulisic to get that goal in. Just a couple of minutes later, Ross Barkley is involved in the build-up to this, to what would be the winning goal for Chelsea. Quick, intricate passes between Barkley, Mount, Giroud, and Azpilicueta leave Azpilicueta on the wings. Now, this is shocking to me because somehow Aspi, as the right back, ends up as Chelsea's left winger for this brief moment. And sure enough, he cuts it in, and Giroud controls it with his left foot while turning, kind of the same way that Mason Mount scored against Everton from that pass from Pedro. So as he's turning, he controls it, and he shoots with his right foot. A deflection falls nicely for us because it like kind of deflects down and then bounces and then goes in kind of high-ish on the goal. Keeper is just standing there looking at it. He had no chance with it. I don't think any keeper would have saved that because of the deflection. All of a sudden, within 2 minutes, it has now become Chelsea 2, Aston Villa 1.
Aspi with two assists in this game, one from the right half, one from the left.
Yep.
But I have to give credit to, I mean, every player is great in this little sequence that happens. It's a nice little, kind of like pretty little football, total football that goes off before Giroud has a deflected shot that goes in, which is just a nice way to cap it off. But despite Giroud's great touch, I am going to give all my credit for this goal to Mason Mount because it's him that has this driving run towards the box. He plays this 1-2 with Giroud, controls it nicely, even though Giroud kind of has his one, his 2-1 doesn't go great.
Right.
It kind of like pops off in the air for a moment, and Mason Mount does well to keep it down, gives it to Aspi, who ends up giving it to Giroud. And when he does make that run, he kind of passes it to Giroud, does the 1-2, and after he passes it to Aspi, he keeps his run into the box, which does draw some defenders with him, which gives a little bit of space for Giroud to actually kind of control it, and he has that extra second of timing before he takes his shot. And we do have a little bit of luck with this goal as well, because when Aspi does pass it in, it goes between the legs of Douglas Luiz, who had the assist. Well, I don't know if you can call it an assist.
It's not an assist because Kepa touched it,
Or
it was a rebound, so... But he did put in the good cross.
Yeah.
So he deserved it. He deserved the meg.
We get the meg and we get the deflection, which puts a little bit of luck into it. But you can't say this wasn't coming.
Yeah. And we were also lucky because when Aspi crosses it in, he really does so without looking. He just, you can tell that his head is down looking at the ball and he just like swipes his left foot at it and it falls in perfectly for Olivier Giroud. Now, for the rest of the game, once that goal goes in, I was like, that's it. We won this game. Because Aston Villa really didn't look like they would score at any point in the game. Even when they did score, they didn't look like they were going to score. So I was confident that we were just going to see it out. I thought that maybe we'd get one more towards the end of the game, which we didn't. Totally fine. But we got the 3 points, which is super important. The cool thing about it was to see the fact that Aston Villa wouldn't put us in any kind of pressure. As in, the Chelsea team that was playing did a very good job of getting the ball and passing it around and keeping possession and creating chances. And Tammy Abraham comes on for Giroud a little bit later on, and he has a corner kick, a header that goes just wide off of a corner kick. So overall, it was a convincing display from Chelsea. I don't think the score really reflected how dominant we were in that game. But with the team just coming back from injury, from the quarantine, and everybody kind of being rusty, even though I made a claim for them not being rusty at the very beginning, with as much as that is as there was going on, I thought that it was a good performance and a good result. And most importantly, a crucial 3 points.
There's one more thing. I have a beef with Chelsea defenders today.
He's out to get you, boys.
There's a cross at the 86th minute, around there, where there's kind of this scooped Aston Villa cross that comes in. Conte is kind of like defending this header against another Villa player who gets the header off because it's easy to out-jump Conte. It's only, what, like 5'7"? So he gets the header off, but it's kind of going nowhere. It's going like right backwards towards Christensen, who just misses, who just doesn't hit the ball, which allows... Here, to give me a second. I don't know what nationality it is, and it does play into factor when you pronounce names.
I believe he is a Spaniard.
So it would be, that doesn't help me at all. Jota?
Yeah.
Jota.
Yeah.
Aston Villa player who kind of scoops in and runs towards the ball that Christensen missed and gets a shot off. It's like a really, like, kind of a hard angle. He's being followed by Rudiger, but he does get a shot that very nearly, that kind of like scrapes against the bar with how close it is. And there's, if that was on the right side, Kepa's not getting to that.
Right.
And if that goes in, that's 2-2, and we're talking a totally different story with this game. And this game feels like just the quintessential Chelsea game this season, besides the fact that we won, because it's lots of possession, there's lots of good chances, but there's no bite in that final third.
Yep.
And we have to rely on a little bit of luck for a couple of those goals. And if any one of these chances that Aston Villa gets goes in, that's it. They only need that one chance. So we need some left backs, we need some center backs, we need somebody coming in the summer.
The cool thing is, you said the quintessential Chelsea game where we have a lot of possession and no bite at the front. Well, to address that, we have signed Hakim Ziyech and Timo Werner and maybe some others. So hopefully we won't be having those problems for much longer. All right, well, with our first win in the bag, next up for us is one small hurdle called Manchester City. We get to play them at Stamford Bridge on Thursday. For us over here in California, the game falls at 12:15 in the PM. I'm excited about this game because it's going to be a real test of where this Chelsea team is and what we can expect for some of the big games that we have for the rest of the season. Now, Manchester City have looked pretty good over the past two games that they've played already. They beat Arsenal 3-0 and they beat Burnley 5-0 on Monday. But I do have high hopes for this game for us because one, we did well against Man City, and two, we're playing at home, and three, I believe that our players have more of a motivation to do well in a game than any Man City player out there. So with that said, Daniel, the first thing I'd like us to do is I want you to give us your lineup prediction and then I'll give mine.
Okay. This is going to be totally off the top of my head, so I put no thought into this.
It will be for me as well.
So I'm thinking we go with the... I think Frank's going to go with the exact same back four and keeper. I don't think he's going to change that. I think we're going to stick with Christensen, Rudiger, Aspie, Alonso. I think that midfield... See, the thing is, before this Aston Villa game, I would have totally taken out... I thought he would have taken out Mason Mount for Jorginho and kind of played that Kovacic, Conte, Jorginho. But because he had such a good game, I could see him sticking with that same midfield three as well, just to kind of have Conte drop deeper to shield that back four, and then have Kovacic kind of doing a similar sort of thing, but making more driving runs forward and have Mount pressing on the ball. The only things I think he is going to change is Giroud off for Tammy, and I think Loftus-Cheek is coming off for Pulisic.
Okay, so say it again. Who are your three in the middle?
Only two changes. Three in the middle, the same. Conte, Kovacic, Mason Mount.
Oh, so you think Jorginho doesn't start?
I don't think Jorginho starts this match.
Okay, all right. And so then up front, it would be Pulisic on the left.
Tammy in the middle.
Tammy down the middle. And Willian on the right.
Yes.
Gotcha. Interesting. Okay. I think here's how Frank is going to line up. I think he is going to go with a 4-3-3. I think that Reece James comes in, even though he looked a little bit shaky in the Aston Villa game for the 10 minutes or whatever he was on. He gave away the ball, I think, three times.
Yeah.
And
it's not a good look for him.
Yeah, and one of them led to a counterattack that Conte had to foul Grealish for. But I think that he starts this game from the get-go. I think Lampard has a lot of confidence in him, and I think that he could be a key player in getting the ball in against some of those Man City defenders, especially if Tammy is the one starting up there. I think he goes with a back four of Reece James, Christensen and Rudiger in the middle, and Aspie on the left. And then he's going to have our favorite three in the middle, or his favorite three in the middle, of Conte, Kovacic, and Jorginho. And then I think in the front, he is going to go with Mason Mount on the left wing. He's going to go with Tammy Abraham down the middle, and Willian on the right. Willian offers way too much experience to be left out of this game. And I think that, again, he's going to use Christian Pulisic as that player that he brings on to make a big difference in the game, maybe around the 60th minute or so. So that's my prediction. That's my lineup prediction. I do think that that's a little bit harsh on Christian Pulisic, but I do also think that he helps the team more coming off the bench as opposed to starting against a Man City team that look really, really, really good and ready to go.
I think with this new 5-sub rule, it's not only does it allow a lot of like players to come off for injury concerns and everything, is that I think it adds just a whole new dynamic to matches. Like now you can make huge tactical switches with your subs.
Yep.
Instead of having kind of like 3 subs and 1 is reserved for injuries, perhaps at the last second, and really only having 2 players you can replace out of your starting 11, or realistically 10, if you're not subbing out your keeper. Instead of being able to sub off basically 1/5 of your team, you could now sub off half of
your outfield players.
Yeah, which is, that can lead to a complete switch in style of play.
Right.
And we're not going to have much time to experiment with how this goes because there's only like
9 games.
Yeah. There's
now,
not too much
now
to
8 games
work
left.
With. And everyone's kind of juggling cups and Champions League
yep.
eventual fixtures that happen. So I don't think anyone's going to be worried about that at the moment.
Right.
But what I could see potentially happening, especially with Lampard's flexibility, with his like kind of formation and with roles that certain squad members have, I could see sort of a 55, similar to this Aston Villa game, 55-minute sub that switches the entire lineup around and kind of shuffles around a lot of players just to confuse City players. Because at this moment, I think Chelsea's only real chance at City right now is to throw something unexpected at them.
Right. And I actually think that this game, we will see that. And for the most part, he's going to keep the 3 in the middle the same, but he's going to go ahead and change everything. My guess is, depending on how the game goes, if he goes with the lineup that I just put out there, right? Frank, if you're listening, help a brother out here. But if he goes with that lineup, then I can see Kovacic getting taken off around the 60th minute.
For Barkley?
Mason, no, for Pulisic. Mason Mount moves back to the midfield, and then Pulisic goes in at left wing, and he just starts running at Kyle Walker, which will be a sight to behold because I do not like Kyle Walker, and I think Pulisic has the better of him. So now the question I want to ask you is, what do you think that this Chelsea team has to do well in order to beat this Man City team?
All right, first of all, is stop having lapses in defensive judgments This Aston Villa game was a great game to get all the kinks out, to get all your kind of mental lapses that these players are going to have. But if you make a mistake like they did a few times in this game against City, they're not going to just score one goal and kind of like let the rest of those chances go. They're going to pounce on every single chance, as we saw in the Burnley game. If you let these City players have a chance, they're going to take it. And they're not going to like lay off the gas after the 3rd goal. They're going to keep going at it.
Right.
I think they're the team with the most goals, like the most games with over 5 goals or more.
Right.
Since Guardiola started.
Yeah. One of the things that I noticed that they do extremely well, they're probably the best team in the world at doing this, is, you know, those little spaces called the half spaces?
Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know, they're the spaces between the midfield and the back line, or the spaces between like your right back and your right center back. It's just those little areas where it's kind of awkward for defensive teams to navigate through because it could belong to either one of those players. So sometimes it ends up not being covered by either one of those players. These Man City players are just like, they know how to sneak in and out of these half spaces and receive the ball there and do something with it. In their game against Burnley on Monday, Phil Foden, Kevin De Bruyne, David Silva, Riyad Mahrez, Bernardo Silva, all of them were just like moving flawlessly in the half spaces and creating a lot of chances. And almost every single one of those goals that Burnley conceded was because they did not know how to deal with those half spaces. So as of right now, at the time of recording, we do not know if Aguero will be fit to start or fit to make an appearance. But if he doesn't, that's a huge plus for us because he absolutely hates our guts and wants to score against us every time we play against one another. One good thing for us is the fact that David Luiz is not going to be in our lineup. This much we know. He had a terrible game against Man City, and not for the first time in his career. I'm feeling good about our chances in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I believe we went over this in our kind of 2 episodes ago where we were talking about all the opponents we're going to have. We didn't play too well against them last time, but I think this is a team that's really grown a lot mentally since that last game. And I think with Conte, I mean, Conte's a big game player. Can't tell me otherwise.
Absolutely is.
This guy scores in every big game we play again.
Are we expecting a Conte hat-trick?
Oh, yeah. I'm expecting at least one Conte goal in this game. I'm putting it out there. I'm putting it out there right now. Conte's going to score in this one. But I think as long as Conte's on form and Mason Mount's on form, that's like kind of the base that I think Lampard's going to build this match around. Because if Conte can cut out a lot of those half spaces, cut out a lot of those passes, and pressure a lot of those City players so they don't have that little time on the ball that they need.
Right.
If Conte's there and able to throw them off that much, they're not going to get their shots off quite as well and easily as they do against Burnley. And if Mason Mount's there, that kid is like an engine. I'm certain that in energy levels, it's only Conte above Mason Mount because he is constantly pressing, he's constantly running. And with those two pressing those City players, I don't think they're going to have nearly as many chances as they think they're going to have. And as long as they can keep that pressure on and keep the turnovers happening, if Chelsea can play, we haven't played off the counter too much this season, but if we can, especially with players like Pulisic, like Willian, who can still, even at like 32, is he 32 or 33?
Willian?
Yeah.
He's 33, I think.
Even at 33, he's still putting in runs in that Aston Villa game. You could see him like sprinting down that field.
Yeah.
I think that we can, if Lampard chooses to play off the counter, which is like one of the only ways to play against City at this point, I think we could definitely get a win off.
Perhaps. I think so too. So with that said, what do you think the final score of this game is going to be?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Because this could either be a 6-0 or a...
It will be a 6-0.
You putting your money on that?
I'm putting my money on that.
Okay. I think for me, my score prediction is going to be a 2-1 to Chelsea.
That's good. That's a safe one. I'm going to go with 3-1 to Chelsea.
Ooh.
I think we're going to go up. Man City is going to start pressing. We're going to score a second one. And it's going to be 2-1 to Chelsea. 2-0 to Chelsea. I think they'll pull one back. 2-1. And then they're just going to start peppering us. They're going after us. And then we're going to go on the counterattack and get a winning goal somewhere between the 80th and the 85th minute. 3-1 to Chelsea, final score.
All right.
Send them back to Man City with their tails behind their legs or between their legs or whatever the expression is.
One of my favorite games, just to look back on, just to watch to see what every player is doing, is that Chelsea-Manchester City game from 2016.
Oh, yes.
3-1.
The Antonio Conte season.
Yes.
There was so much about that game.
That game is amazing.
Yep. We were away against them. Mm-hmm. They got the first goal. De Bruyne misses an open goal.
Yeah.
He was 3 or 4 yards out.
And there's nobody there.
Yep. And then the goals that we score are very Antonio Conte goals, right? It was three counterattacks.
Yeah.
Kind of. Or it was two counterattacks and one long ball from Fabregas to Diego Costa.
Yes.
And Eden Hazard absolutely skins Kolarov. Willian skins whoever it is. I think it was Otamendi.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm sure those Man City players still have nightmares about. And the best part about that season was Antonio Conte had just arrived. Pep Guardiola had just arrived at the Premier League. Jose Mourinho had arrived at the Premier League. And they both spent millions of dollars. And all the headlines leading up to the season's opening was, this is going to be a season between Man United and Man City. Red against blue.
Yeah.
Mourinho against Pep. And sure enough, we come in. We don't start that well. 13 wins in a row starting in September. And then we just can't be caught. This is fast becoming an episode about that season. It's not going to be. We got to stay focused. But
every time I remember that game and how, like, I was fairly new at that time, but I was scared of Man City.
Yeah, that was your first season.
Yeah. And that City team was already scary back then, especially managed by Guardiola. And going into that, I was never that confident in Chelsea against the big teams at that moment. So going into that, I was terrified. And once De Bruyne missed that sitter, if anything, that made me even more scared because it was like, we're already 1-0 down.
Yeah.
They're coming at us. But that just shows what Chelsea is all about.
Right.
Because even going down, we still have Hazard, we still have Diego Costa, we still have Fabregas, we still have Willian. And they all made a huge impact on that game. And I think a similar thing could happen at this one. But what I'm going to say is actually going to happen is that we're going to go 1 down first. And we're going to fight back for a 2-1 win.
I like the sound of that.
I'm optimistic.
I don't think it's going to happen, though. And I say this because of this reason. I actually think that we can play Man City man for man, player for player. The way that they play, I'm not saying our players are as good as they are, but the way that they like to play, I think we're equipped to play just like them. And actually, outdo them in that, because Man City is so aggressive when it comes to the high press. So aggressive. Like, they're almost naive in how they press very high up the field. Because then what ends up happening is, if you just get past almost like the first block of pressure that they give you, then you have loads of open space. And Jorginho and Kovacic are masters of getting out of those tight spaces. So I can definitely see Man City pressing us and pressing us and pressing us, and we just outplay them from the back and have plenty of chances on them. So because of that, I think that we're going to go ahead first. But I do think with all the firepower that they have, they will get a goal back at some point. But I still think that we're going to win this one. So find out how wrong I am in just a couple of days. So with all that said, this is where we're going to call it quits for this episode. And we want to let you know that as far as our schedule for next week goes, it might look a little bit different. Up until now, we have been releasing episodes on Wednesdays. For next week, we're going to release our episode on Thursday so that we are able to review the West Ham game. Now, between the Man City game and the West Ham game, there is a Leicester game that we are going to play in the FA Cup. But because that is in the FA Cup, we won't put so much stress on it on this episode or the next episode unless the game calls for it. So stay tuned, watch the game, and we might talk about it at length or we might just mention it briefly. But you can count on us to not preview, but review the West Ham game and preview the game after that.
Just because of the schedule. I mean, like, because we're putting this out once a week.
And the games are coming in very thick and fast and left and right. We're going to have to take an L when it comes to our schedule.
So between this and the next podcast, there'll be three games, but we're only reviewing City. We're going to talk about all of them as much as we can in the next episode, but catch us next week on Thursday instead of Wednesday.
Another friendly reminder to subscribe to our podcast if you haven't yet, and email us using academyofblues@gmail.com with questions, comments, concerns, fan emails, show topic ideas,
lineups,
predictions, all that goodness. So with that said, I have been Maddie.
I've been Daniel.
And you have been listening to Academy of Blues, episode 13.